Gene Seaton, the assistant district attorney from here in Sitka. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning.
And we, when we were sort of negotiating this interview, finding a time that worked for us best, it's interesting that the last day of October, which is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, happened to be open. But, you know, just because the month is changing over doesn't mean that this problem is in any way, you know, lessened or going away. It's still out there, and you are one of the people in the front lines. So good morning, and thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
And you're part of a sort of a chain that goes right from you right up to the governor's office that's involved in trying to step up the campaign against domestic violence. And the governor, a couple of years ago, actually decided to make it a priority of his administration to take on, to address the domestic violence problem. And I guess that it's all sort of started with gathering data and doing some surveys, and you're starting to see results, starting to see data anyway.
That's right. A part of the governor's 10-year initiative that began in 2009 was to gather baseline data to see exactly where we were in Alaska. It's kind of like getting on the scale after New Year's.
Right.
You have to find out where you are to make any improvements or to know if you're improving. So the first survey was done through the University of Alaska, and that was a survey done in May and June of 2010 that surveyed approximately 870 adult women in Alaska. The women were asked whether or not in their lifetime they had been the victim of either domestic violence or sexual violence. And the results were that out of, extrapolating then from that number, that out of every 100 adult women in the state of Alaska, 48% had experienced intimate partner violence. 37 of those 100 had experienced sexual violence. 59 had experienced intimate partner violence.
And as you said, this is in their lifetimes.
In their lifetime, correct.
Right. And so this is not necessarily, as you were saying, you know, data from last year. This is
exactly. This was surveying the women about their lifetime experience.
Mm-hmm. Still, startlingly high.
It is. Some of the questions that were asked were, has an intimate partner ever slapped you, ever pushed you against other objects, ever strangled or suffocated you, ever used a weapon against you, those kind of questions, or has the person threatened to do one of those things?
Mm-hmm.
The sexual assault part of it was divided into two parts, whether or not anyone had been forced by the use of force to perform a sexual act or had sex forced on them, or had they ever been incapacitated through alcohol, drugs, or something else to the point that there was a sexual act to which they were incapable of giving consent.
Right. And you also mentioned, Gene, that it's not just experiencing an act, but or an act of violence, but the threat of violence is important too. That was part of the survey as well.
It is that threat of imminent violence is another way of exerting control.
Okay, and that's not necessarily a fine point in law, is it? Isn't the threat of violence regarded as seriously as actual violence itself?
It is. The threat of imminent physical injury is a misdemeanor, just as is causing physical injury. If the threat of violence involves a dangerous instrument or a weapon, it's elevated to the felony level.
Mm. So now that we have the baseline, well, first off, do we know where Alaska stands versus the rest of the country? Are we comparable, ahead, or below? I think the anecdotally, I've heard that we are ahead in domestic violence statistics.
Unfortunately, I know that as far as the sexual violence in particular, we are far ahead of the rest of the country.
Okay.
We don't know if that's due to maybe people here more willing to report. That's part of why our own survey was important.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now that we have the numbers, what are some of the strategies that people who work in law enforcement, and I guess it's not just law enforcement. I mean, there is some effort at least recognizing that the problem has to be dealt with kind of holistically, right?
Absolutely. It's a problem that our entire society deals with, from healthcare providers, the schools, teachers who may be dealing with children who came from a home where last night they couldn't sleep or do homework because of violence going on in the home. So it's recognized as a community-wide issue, and part of the governor's initiative is to involve all the affected players.
Right. Some things that from the law enforcement side of things, which you represent, actually involve more bodies, more law enforcement presence in more rural and remote areas of the state.
That's right. One of the big pushes has been to train and hire more village public safety officers for remote areas. And that's an ongoing process. Began last year to get several new VPSOs and continues today.
Yeah, that sounds like a good thing all the way around, but it's particularly important for domestic violence victims, right?
Studies have shown that there's a much more likely chance of a prosecution taking place when a victim is able to report immediately to a local village public safety officer, rather than having to wait for a trooper to get to the remote village.
All right. Are there any other steps that are being taken to, I guess, increase the successful prosecution rate of domestic violence crimes?
Well, there are certainly coordination with other entities to try to support victims so that they're able to carry through with a prosecution. So many times economic factors, worry about what will become of their children, mm-hmm. might keep a victim from wanting to participate in a prosecution. So we recognize that supporting the victims in all aspects can help with the prosecution.
Right. I just sort of touched on in my preface to that last question that it's a problem of, I guess, in law enforcement terms, you're kind of dealing with the immediate crisis, but there's a whole sort of foundational there's a kind of a systemic problem that's going on in a family that law enforcement may not necessarily be able to address, and you do require cooperation and collaboration with a lot of other services, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, I imagine that domestic violence victims, maybe unlike some other crime victims, feel particularly isolated because it does involve their families.
Exactly, and part of the crime is to isolate the victim, to separate them from their families and friends, to where they're dependent on the perpetrator.
Yeah. Jean, before we went on the air, we were talking about how just over the course of your career, attitudes towards domestic violence have changed, and part of the governor's effort is to continue to push for those sort of societal attitude shifts.
Absolutely. It's a movement that's been going on for decades, But as with anything, it takes time to have that attitude ingrained that at the very basic level, we need to choose respect in all our relationships.
Mm-hmm. And when you started, that was not necessarily the case?
Not with every person. I mean, you've heard of wife beater T-shirts,
right?
That shouldn't even exist.
Right. Yeah. I have heard of that, and it is interesting how we move from, you know, how things kind of how society, you know, does change in its attitudes towards that kind of thing, and. I don't think that particular kind of garment is going away, but maybe the name is one we ought to seriously consider dropping. Choosing respect is an important thing, and you mentioned that when you work in these cases, you often find that there is kind of there is a very evident lack of respect sometimes.
It often begins with name calling, just. The derogatory terms that an abuser will use to address the victim begins right there to tear down her self-esteem, begins that process of isolation that we were just talking about.
Yeah, so it's not just a single incident. It's kind of a long period of sort of corrosive behavior and attitude that may factor in to a domestic violence incident ultimately.
Exactly.
So Jean, where are we? Where is the governor's initiative headed? What's obviously the end goal is to try and reduce these statistics, but I guess the main effort right now from your perspective is to what? To make sure that people have access to resources when they are victims?
Yes, and to make sure that in their home, this is the place that has the greatest protection, certainly from searches and seizures. It's the place in which we should feel the most safe and secure. The goal here is to ensure that everyone in their home does feel safe and free from threats, free from violence, and if they're not, that they don't feel any embarrassment or any fear in reporting it, in getting help either from law enforcement or the other entities that exist to help.
Yeah, domestic violence shelters, and in Sitka we've got a good one, the Safe Shelter, Sitkins Against Family Violence.
Yes, they aren't just a shelter, but they provide many services to help women.
Okay.
And not just women, anyone who's a victim of domestic violence.
Families. So that could be a good starting place for people. Jean, we've got to go, but I just want to know, we're 2 years into this program. As somebody who is kind of in the front lines, do you feel some traction taking hold? Does the fact that the governor is addressing the problem in such a high-profile way, do you feel any movement?
I do. And one of the specific things I've noticed is other women, other victims who are willing to come forward and help in a case, testify about prior crimes to help a new victim of the same perpetrator.
All right. Well, if it makes your job easier, then so much the better. So, Jean Seaton is the Assistant District Attorney here in Sitka. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We've been talking about the Governor's Domestic Violence Initiative. Thanks a lot for coming in and sharing this with us, Jean.
Thank you.